Then let me call the meeting to order. Institutional Effectiveness Council meeting, special meeting. It is Thursday, August 16th, 2018. And yes, I have to read that because it's been a while. Okay, call to order, are there any college updates? Please share the ceremony, a little bit about it.
It was lovely.
Yes, it was lovely.
Very nice.
The facility is beautiful.
Yeah.
The technology is amazing.
We have three partners. I don't know if you knew that, John, but you had heard probably about, well, of course, SNC and Brandon University, and Washington State University just this last week has committed to offering programs as well.
And I did know about Washington because some of their programs are in our area.
Excellent.
In business area. So
yeah.
It is very cool. Very cool. Hey, by the way, was there a good turnout? A lot of people?
Very, very nice.
Easily 120 people in the audience. Easily.
But it was just invitation only, right?
And that was by invitation only. Yep, that's right. Next week is going to be some open houses for the public. And I do believe that part of our convocation and welcome back will involve some staff events to get everyone comfortable and welcome at the university center.
Cool. Very cool.
Oh, and college staff, right?
College staff.
Week.
And also, very exciting, Lisa Maloff donated $100,000 today for any student who attended LTCC and moves to a course offered, a program offered at the university center.
Woohoo!
Are you serious?
Wow!
Serious?
Yes.
Holy jeez.
Is this Lisa like a
that woman is amazing.
Or?
She's an angel.
She's an angel.
Oh, she's
like
Amazing, right?
Yes. Totally amazing. Humbled by that. Jeez. All right. Any other updates?
John, yesterday myself, Dr. Risden, and Tori went down to the juvenile facility down in Placerville to just kind of talk about and learn from them. Very productive meeting. We look forward to, you know, serving our local juvenile justice detainees, both in South Lake Tahoe and in Placerville in the upcoming quarters, as they need it. And really by serving, we're just kind of establishing those relationships and so they feel comfortable coming and knocking on our doors, asking for help to navigate academia. And we're developing contacts to, through those locations, to any students that we're leasing in that local area, they feel like they can go and be comfortable going to Folsom College as well and navigating
awesome.
Academia at that location.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Wow. I hear stuff like this and it makes me miss the place. Although I have to tell you, I do look at that every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's the farm, huh?
That's part of it. That's some laundry out there, too. Okay. Any other updates? Are we all good?
Issy was really great this year.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
How many students?
Total agreement.
We don't have total final numbers yet till after grades are all, you know, after summer school's over. Mm-hmm. But it looks like our preliminary number is 553.
Cool.
It
was very full, but we used the library plaza for the first time for classes. Opening session was really wonderful. And we used it for class for some of our cooking sessions and other sessions throughout the day, and it was really, really successful. Very successful, and we had, right here?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We had, it was fun this year. We had, we had a fun week.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Hey,
very good.
John, yeah. I have one more announcement.
Our brand new,
and we're very excited to have her here, Director of Institutional Effectiveness, is joining us now, Ms. Donna Sohan. Just left a very exciting meeting regarding some great resources that we have for technology, and this is her first IEC meeting with us. So welcome, Donna.
Thank you. I apologize for my tardiness. I have to say, this is the farthest distance when you're running late.
When you're not, it's very short.
Right.
That's how you get your steps in, Donna. Good job.
Right. Lisa.
Yes.
And this is also Jonathan's first meeting.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Jonathan, you feel like you're
nice
just...
Nice to meet you, John.
See, if you brush it in a dramatic entrance, too.
See, Jonathan, the honeymoon's over, man.
I did a little introduction earlier, but yes, that's right.
Lisa,
we've been here more than a month, forget about it.
Are you a member of IEC?
Oh, yes, as a guest, we have Leslie Amato with us today also, which we're always happy to have Leslie hanging around, she's awesome.
From the CDC.
CDC Director, Leslie Amato?
Yep.
Yeah. Rad.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, they're on my site, I don't know whether they're on the site.
We can only see what's on.
Ready?
Uh-oh, we're moving.
Hi, guys.
Hey, hi, guys.
Okay, yeah, our very high tech.
So, look, I got the two sharp cheddars in here, Jonathan and Shane.
Yes. Awesome.
Okay, any other updates, are we good? We're good? All right. Let's go to reports 2.01. First reading this is, folks. First reading of the 18-19 final budget. It's all yours, Nick.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. I'm here to talk to you about the 2018-19 budget. Today we're gonna focus almost exclusively on the unrestricted general fund, Fund 11. We are not probably going to be able to see attachments easily up on the screen. So if you could pull them up on your laptops, it looks like Lisa's giving them up for Donna. Because some of them are very hard to read, even on laptop. Lot going on. So we are currently working to finalize the 2017-18 budget, but we are currently projecting an ending fund balance of about $2.4 million, which is 15.3% of appropriations. You know, the district has a board policy with a cap at 15%, and the board has directed staff to kind of keep that at about 15%. The district generated 1,662 full-time equivalent students in 2017-18. We're currently looking at, that's based on our last 320 report we've received, and I believe we're looking at a recalculation, but that's what we're working with right now. So in 2018-19, we are shifting to a new funding formula. So that's kind of going to be the big topic of today. I am going to assume you read the agenda and not kind of read word for word what's there. But formerly, we were funded completely on full-time equivalent students. How many students are sitting in our classrooms? And that's what we got money for. So the chancellor and legislature have worked to create a new funding formula that puts more of a focus on serving students and providing students from kind of lower income backgrounds, disproportionately impacted communities, giving us more money to serve them and serve them well and ensure their success. So now the new funding formula is comprised of three parts. There's a base allocation, which is very similar to the previous funding formula that's focused on full-time equivalent students. There's a supplemental allocation and a student success allocation. So last year, years prior, we got approximately $5,000 per full-time equivalent student. And this new funding formula in 2018-19, the base allocation is going to comprise 70% of the total allocation. In 1920, it's going to go down to 65%, and then it'll be 60% of the total allocation in 2020-21. So our per FTS amount is about 70%, so we're getting about $3,000 per full-time equivalent student now instead of five. We also still get the rural allocation and a base allocation just that they provide all the schools, just to open the doors. Incarcerated students and special admin students are still funded at the $5,000 per FTS amount. The idea is that with some of these other metrics we're going to talk about, they might not be producing some of the outcomes. And there is a big emphasis on continuing to serve those students in the state. Therefore, we still get the $5,000 per student. Yes, Maxine.
The non-credit CDCP?
Non-credit CDCP and non-credit are still funded at the previous rate. So, which does include a COLA moving into this new year.
So, I'm sorry, the CDCP will be the 5,000 then? And the non-credit, non-CDCP will be 60%?
Yes.
Which is what it is currently?
Yes, okay. Yes. As it stands right now. Know that everything in this new funding formula is, while it is signed into law, it's still moving, and there are, you know, there will be adjustments. There's a committee that will be formed to look at it and evaluate and provide recommendations to continue its improvement. So previously we've worked under a model of stabilization. If we've served 1,800 students 1 year, and the next year we serve 1,700 students, we got a stabilization, a dollar amount, to prevent massive swings in funding and allow us time to plan and account for lower revenue and how to serve more students. Now they're gonna use a three-year rolling average, which includes your current year, which will be 2018-19, the prior year, and the prior year. So they add those amounts up, divide by three, and they get a three-year rolling average with the idea of preventing massive swings in funding and giving colleges some stability and knowing how much money they're gonna get moving forward. So the supplemental allocation will be 20% of the total allocation. And we will receive, I think, $919 for headcount, we're talking headcount now, for each student that is eligible for the Pell Grant, AB 540, and the California College Promise Grant, formerly known as the BOG fee waiver. So this is the idea of getting extra funds to serve our low-income students, because oftentimes they require more services. So it's allowing us to provide those high-quality services to make sure that they meet their educational goals. And then finally, we come to the student success allocation. 2018-19, that will be 10% of our total allocation. Remember, the basic allocation went from 70 down to 60 over 3 years. So it's the opposite is true in the student success allocation. It'll be 10% this year, next year it'll be 15%, and then in 2021 it will be 20% of the total allocation. And we will receive money based on a point system. And we'll get 4 points, for example, if a student receives an associate degree for transfer. We'll get 3 points if they receive an associate's degree. We'll get points if they complete transfer level math and English in their first year. If they transfer to a four-year college, any accredited four-year college or university, that's an update. Previously, it was only a UC or a CSU. We'll get a point if students earn a living wage within 1 year of completion. If they complete a certificate, we'll get points. And so all these points, yes.
Stepping back to the any university in the country?
Any accredited four-year university, okay. College or university in the country. Okay. Right, so public, private.
That's a wonderful change.
Yeah. So we know a lot of our students will go to Sierra Nevada College or Brandman, hopefully.
Or UNO.
Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Will you get validation of that through the clearinghouse?
I am not sure in this excellent transition, and let me actually get to that in a minute. Yes,
okay.
And it's all in here. We will talk about that shortly. So for each one of those points, we will get something about $104 per point. I'm not sure, I don't have that number in front of me right now. So a student can complete math, transfer level math and English, and in our certificate, and the points are stackable. So that kind of comprises the three sections. Are there any questions on so far? I mean, please feel free to ask a question at any point, but okay, keep moving. So the data for all of these points exists in here, in this book that we just got on Monday. A lot of people know that we went out and got a rural data grant that was available to all the rural schools. So we're getting $90,000 to bring in help, outside help, to make sure our data is valid. But they do have a data definitions list and where all of the data is coming from, whether it's from the TWEET 320 report, whether it's from MIS, self-reported, some of it's a special data run that they do, that the chancellor's office does. So we will be following up with that directly, and I know Rusty is very anxious to talk with you about that and move forward to make sure the numbers we're reporting are accurate, because we want to make sure we get all our money and we don't want to have to give money back because we inaccurately reported some money. Good?
Good.
Good, so that will be coming.
Oh yes, that's where I was just running from.
Right, okay.
Our third meeting.
Okay. Okay, so if we want to open the first attachment, we're going to look at a very familiar graph to most people that have been here a while, but it's our full-time equivalent student comparison graph.
Nick, I just want to interject quickly and apologize for not bringing you guys printouts that are easier to read in front of your face.
Everybody's got a laptop.
More just a comment on that transferring over to, I think that's important because now the chancellors, the private universities are taking that AAT right in. So a student that doesn't have access to education, we can still track those points if they're going to a private sector college. So I think that's important to note as well.
Right. Thank you. All right, so we will see in the third column from the right, 2017-18 projected, based on our 320 report we turned in July, we are currently projecting 1,679 full-time equivalent students for last school year. I know there's a bit of question about that, and we're gonna possibly look at doing a recalculation, but as we stand for the numbers you're seeing in the budget, that's where we're at right now.
Nick, I have two things about
yes.
This. So just two things that are a note. So that's 455 distance education FTS. That's, you know, 10% higher than our high watermark ever. So that's our highest distance ed ever, you know, far and above. And I can tell you this summer we had a huge distance ed. Our distance ed's up 25% year over year. So we're definitely seeing some growth. I mean, you know, what that's attributable to, you know, we've asked, you know, Donna's going to kind of be doing some research to look at zip codes and cross-referencing that with some of our marketing lists and our outreach lists, but that's one thing that I think to note. The other thing you'll notice, the JPA came in at 248 FTS. This is important. The number, we have them at 315 in the number that we submitted to the state for P2 in spring. So, you know, everyone turn to me and hear this. The funding they gave us in that binder is based on the number we submitted in the spring. That was 315. The JPA is 248, right? That's a pretty whopping difference. So it's about 65 lower. So they had some positive attendance tracking issues, which we've had here at our campus in terms of not kind of doing those records right. So they're doing an audit of two very large courses to see if we can recapture that. Our hope would be, We're not going to hit that 315, but our hope is we have one final time to resubmit to the state what's called a recalculation. And so we went back, we've been able to verify these additional records, and in fact, we're not 248, we're 275 or something. But I just want to point that out because, unfortunately, that was a bummer. You know, if that would have kind of went as it was projecting, you know, we had a lot of positives, I would say, in this, but that we would have been really positive. And I think the challenge is the state still thinks we are, at least in what it's finding, what it's giving us our advanced apportionment number on is based on that larger number that had a pretty significant drop. So I think those are the two biggest things. It's just know distance ed, it's up like never before. JPA, we had a end of year, literally we got this call, I don't know, like 2 days before we submitted the 320 report this summer. I mean, it was after the school year ended. It was in July when we got this call saying, oh, we're having a record keeping problem. So just FYI, do you want to add something?
Yeah, just check.
So just two things to kind of note on that.
Okay, so moving back to the new funding formula, we're going to have a three-year average. So the totals from our 16-17 actual, 17-18 projected, and 18-19 budgeted are what this revenue, current revenue, and this next picture, what we'll look at, is based upon. Are there any other questions about FTS comparison?
Is the average doesn't include minus the stabilization?
Minus the prior year stabilization is not included. So we do have an actual growth of about 2%. from 16-17 to 17-18 in actual FTS served. We did have that winter weather allowance in 16-17, but for the students we have on campus that served through our distance education, we did have growth of 2%, which I think is encouraging. So FTS is not as big of a part of our funding as in previous years. So if there are no other questions, yes.
And when do we anticipate having 17-18 actuals?
The FTS or financials?
Financials, sorry.
Soon.
Hopefully by the end of the week. I mean, in order to...
September. I would say probably, you know, September. I mean, the budget goes to the board on what, September 11th? So, you know, a week before then or so, the board pack will post, and that'll be your unaudited financials, which just, at least the last few years, are unaudited, not sure audited.
Yeah. And then the audit happens in October. So moving on to the second attachment, our three-year unrestricted budget summary. We are going to look at the last two columns, and I'm going to start with the second to last one, 17-18 projected actuals. Remember, we were still funded completely on FTS, so that is based on 1,679 full-time Coleman students. Total revenue was about almost $15.8 million. Total appropriations are closer to $15.7 million right now, with an ending fund balance of $2.4 million. Based on the way things stand right now, we have a surplus of $41,000. But we do have processes in place and budget building assumptions, and that will likely be allocated to our OPEB account or funding a purse and STIRS reserve somewhere to put the district in a good position moving forward. Any questions on 2017-18?
I would just add, just so folks know, because of the time frame, I mean, to give you a sense, and you probably already alluded to this, the budget workshop used to be in July, like middle of late July, you get numbers. So
right.
Because of the timing of this, is everything's just behind. Senior leadership team hasn't even looked at this. Like, I don't even know that what we think's in the budget for next year is actually, I mean, I think we're probably pretty close, like
yeah.
95%
of yeah.
There might be a thing or two. So this is definitely intended to kind of be a first read, but I think there is, I mean, you know, kudos to Rusty and Andrea and Marilyn, Nick and everyone that got it here, but they've been kind of like burning the midnight oil over the last few days to put this document together. And so there's probably a little vetting. So
it is very, very tentative at this point. It's probably fairly close, but there probably will be changes by the time you see it again.
September 6th.
September 6th for the second reading.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so moving on to the 2018-19 final budget. Just under that, you'll see instead of an FTS number, we have SCFF. That's to remind us all that we are now funded based on the student-centered funding formula with the basic allocation, supplemental, and student success allocations. Our total revenue is currently projected at about $17.2 million as we know it. Jeff mentioned that in the simulations we got, you know, our FTS numbers were based on what we submitted in P2 when the JPA was 70 FTS higher. We looked through there and we noticed there was some data that was incorrect. So based on the best numbers that we know to be true, that's what we're looking at.
And if I could add to that, I mean, the way I kind of monitor the thing is the best numbers that we have right now combined with the best understanding of the formula is how we're calculating that, because I'm going to give you a few examples. So and any formula calls out different groups. I'll use ISP because we have an ISP program. They'll say, oh, special admin student, ISP. It says we're serving about 600 ISP students in their data. I mean, does that sound right to you?
Full-time and Golden students.
Oh,
it's not headcount.
And it's saying that Coast College, the largest program in the state, is serving zero. And so colleges up and down the state have had MIS issues forever. It's a known problem. Well, what's happened now, like the game just changed because MIS kind of didn't matter. It was the thing that happened. It mattered, but it was the thing that was over here. But everything came off the 320 enrollment report and the 311 budget report. And those were the two reports the state used pre-allocation, so it's the two reports everyone paid attention to, and there's a semi-S data. All of a sudden, in this new formula, they need all these different components. And so they're pulling on the MIS data. And so, I mean, we have, and since last spring, I've been saying this, is we got to have huge sense of urgency around data integrity. And that's good news is that Donna and data integrity, they're like this. And so, but it's going to really create a game changer for us. But there's stuff like that that just, not like digging deep, but just like basic sniff tests. Like, what's 600 full-time equivalent science? That's not right. Coast College has zero, the biggest program in the state. They have zero. So we're expecting many reshufflings of the deck throughout this year, and they're going to, on our first 311 report, or our next 320 report for next term, they're going to ask us to differentiate some groups, so we're going to have to report our numbers accurately. MIS, you put in a lot of data, and it kind of runs through the combobulator. I'm oversimplifying it here, and then some other report does with the state. There's definitely going to be a lot higher scrutiny on those numbers. There's going to be external validation of those numbers. So I just want to say, you know, big picture, I'm supportive of the general direction the student-centered funding formula is going. I wrote a letter of support to the legislator. We definitely were very involved. I'm just super cautious because on the surface, and I had a conference call with Diane Hook, who many of you know, last Thursday. She was telling me about all the issues with their numbers. There's a number of districts up and down the state. Some districts are just going, oh, the state gave us that number in the binder, we're good. Well, those districts are going to be in trouble. Then there's a lot of other districts like College of the Canyons, like us, are saying, well, let's dig into that number. And okay, what do we really think is going to be coming from the state? So that's a statewide thing. I suspect the research and planning group and chief student service officers and ACBO, all these different groups will probably start leading some trainings on like how to calculate your student center funding formula. But right now, some of the data they use for it is not readily available to colleges. So all I would say is I think this is good news. And I think like this time next year, I'll be able to say for certain, yes, this is good news. But right now, we're in a lot of uncertainty about what they're saying we're gonna get versus what we're really gonna get. And once they audit our numbers, how that's gonna look different. And what about the recal, the GPA? So I just want folks to know, I think anytime there's change, there's a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity, and we're like in a major period of uncertainty and ambiguity.
Okay. So we're gonna dig into the revenue a little bit deeper on the next attachment. But we'll finish up here with our projected expenses for 2018-19. Our current total expenditures are just over $17 million. That does include assumptions. The board approved raises for the administration and directors of confidentials. Those are included in here. There's some other assumption and faculty. There's some other assumptions.
I don't have a list if you want to speak to those. I mean, it's our intent. We need to still go through our process with academic senate, but I think it's our intent that we'll be replacing the faculty position next year and not waiting to year end. That's in there. It's our intent to have a part-time position related to the university center that will actually be permanently and will be posted and permanently hired. That's in there. So there's some assumptions like that are aligned. And then also there's a lot of stuff that came out of annual unit plans and stuff like that was approved through the budgetary process. Those are smaller things. That's, for instance, like travel to, what's the new college that we brought on?
Sierra Conservation Center.
Yeah, so as we brought on a new college, Jane's AUP said, great, you brought on a new college, so this is good news, we're serving students, but we still need travel there, we still need supplies for that. So there's a lot of little things like that came through the budget process where we're adding more dual enrollment courses at the high school. When we add those courses, we place stipends to the high school faculty for the school district pays them to teach. We pay stipends for them to do all the college-related paperwork. So there's additional for that. So there's a lot of like little small things like that. The bigger things are the contracts that have been approved with all our groups, except for classified employee union is the only outstanding group right now. And the PERS and STIRS increases, that's another big significant thing. You know, a few of these kind of key positions, and then a lot of those smaller annual unit plan budget requests that came from departments across tech gave us a technology example, Pat, for instance, like the INET contract and the Datatel contract went up 4% as it does. There's, you know, those sort of things.
Changes to utilities, increased utility fees.
Increased utilities. We've actually been, and this is something I'm very proud of, because you know, I've always said is if you can hold your utility fees flat, your budget flat, you're winning, because utilities go up every year, right? Stupid. I mean, if you monitor your home bill, pushing their rates up on an annual basis. So the last 3 or 4 years, we haven't completed the utility budget because we brought in more efficient boilers. We brought in more efficient lights. All those parking lot lights are all LED. So as we've been doing that, the rate per kilowatt hour or rate per therm or whatever the kind of measurement is for natural gas has been going up, but our use has been going down. But we finally this year kind of hit a breaking point where we weren't retrofitting the boiler, we weren't retrofitting any lights, but the rates were still going up. So that's actually probably one of the bigger increases in the entire budget is the natural gas. And I'm going to start, you know, Nick's kind of on the spot here without Rusty, and I'm a little on the spot either because partly I handed over the vast majority of the details to Rusty. I just been paying attention, so I got enough in my head to speak to it. So,
okay.
I would just say, maybe on that note, is this is a first read today, right?
Yes.
Yes.
You're going to give a final budget with a lot more descriptors in it, right? So, I think we're doing our best here to spitball what we have, but you will get more details.
Yeah. So based on our projected revenue, projected expenditures, we have a projected ending fund balance of about $2.5 million, which is still moving as we finalize the 17-18 and what's actually in the budget 18-19, what our revenue is going to be, and that is about 14.93% of appropriations, so right under that board approved. The ceiling in the board policy, it's still putting us in a comfortable position if we did see a major drop in revenue or something. We currently have a surplus of $136,000, but as Jeff mentioned, there's many things still moving and senior leadership team still needs to meet and discuss what's happening. So September 6th, we will have a things will probably look a little bit different, but hopefully not too much. So any questions before we move on? Okay, so the third attachment.
I'll just say one other thing on that. Sorry, I was just
calculating
to make sure my numbers are right. And you know, Pat, you might be able to speak to this a little bit on mine, but also part of that is we know we have a contract open, and I don't have the exact dollar amount off the last contract, at least for that first year. I want to say I thought it was $80,000, and if it's $80,000 the salary, you times that by what, 1.15, you get the PERS impact. So it's probably about $100,000 when you add on those other little payroll costs and stuff like that. So that's also part of it is there's a little bit of, until you close that contract, if you're balanced, then you're in trouble. You want to have a little surplus until you close the contract so you have room to close the contract. So I mean, you're probably tracking those numbers better than I am, but
it's okay.
Okay, third attachment, unrestricted budgeted revenues. So there's a lot going on this sheet. The first column is the account number for our revenue, which I'm going to use to kind of direct you around the sheet a little bit. We have a description of what that revenue source is. Then we have 2017-18 projected actuals. We have the 18-19 projected budget, and then assumptions, which include notes and kind of where we got that number and why we think that is the case. So I'm gonna start off by talking about total computational revenue. And that was how the money we got from serving full-time equivalent students. Now it's gonna be what we get from the student center funding formula. So that includes everything in yellow. And that is a total computational revenue. So all of those numbers in yellow add up to our total revenue line from apportionment. So for example, if you look at 8630, our education protection account, that's projected at about $2 million in last year, and this year it's gone down to $1.5 million. Well, that means we got an increase of $500,000 somewhere else, right? It within a year, if it goes up or down, it's all one big total. So we can collect more student fees, we would get less apportionment. If we get more property taxes from the county, our apportionment from the state would go down. It adds up to that total number based on our funding formula, whether it's full-time equivalent students or the new funding formula. You will see a decline in student enrollment fees, object 8874 there, kind of about two-thirds of the way down. Part of that is due to the new California College Promise and the Lake Tahoe College Promise. First time, full-time students will not be paying fees. So that's some of that. The others is just that total computational revenue idea. The California College Promise, we are showing in revenue line 8615, back up towards the top. And that is in blue, signifying it as a one-time revenue source. The legislature of the state has said we're going to do it this year for sure, but it might not be ongoing. So if that becomes ongoing, we'll take it out of the blue, put it into the yellow. Just colors are, make it easier for everyone to track what's going on. Some other big things, kind of talking about big changes. Number 8830 was our snow globe revenue, and we had matching expenditures. That's been moved to Fund 59 under the Community Play Consortium because it's out on the Community Play Consortium field, so that has been moved there. 8851 was where we showed the lease revenue from the Forest Service building. That has been moved to Fund 41, the Capital Projects Fund. That was a Capital Projects lease, so we're putting the revenue into the Capital Projects Fund. And finally, 8983 down at the bottom, the very bottom line there. That was a foundation reimbursement for part of Nancy, the director's salary, and for the Halden Art Gallery. We're going to not do that again, and with the idea that...
I can speak to that one, I think, because there's been talking about this for a long time, and I'm curious what this... I mean, this is a governance group, so I want to hear your input and see what you think about this. So when the college always paid for the foundation director, and then when Kendra came here, it was, 11, 12, pretty tough times, and so she went to the foundation and said, I need you to pick up half-time of the foundation director and half-time of the assistant to kind of help us through this period of time. So the foundation's been doing that ever since. The challenge with that is the first $60,000 the foundation raises every year, they write a check to the college to pay for salaries. And I'm a donor. I know many of you are a donor. You provide funds to that restricted fund. I mean, where would you rather have your foundation going to something against Nancy? Would you rather have it going to Nancy's salary? Would you rather have it going to somebody who's getting a promise or a scholarship or so on and so forth? The national research says if you have a foundation that says 90%, 95%, 100% of our funds, but like 90 or above, go directly to programs, or in our case, programs and scholarships, it's going to be much more compelling to donors. And I've worked with a number of foundation consultants. Nancy and I went to the national conference on college advancement, happened to be in California this year, in last October we went. And, the big colleges that were really making headway, they had no staffing in their foundation. Their foundation was money in for students and for programs. College of the Canyons, I've talked to their folks a lot. They have three staff in their office, and the district pays for them. So, how do you rationalize that? They go, well, look how much money they bring back for students. And again, what I would say is, here's the twist. The apportionment money at the top, we take $60,000 out of the foundation and say, the college will pay for that because technically that's our employee, right? And now all of a sudden there's $60,000 new in the foundation, and you give that to Promise kids on the Nevada side that weren't coming to our college before, well, where are they paying that money to? The college. Do you understand that? So, or they're California students and they're using it to go to school here, they're increasing our apportionment. So most of the folks I've talked to in the state that have done this analysis, they say you'll make, somebody uses an ad, I'm going to quote this, but it says, you'll make money hand over fist if you do this. Basically their approach was the idea of, it's much better for the college to pay the $60,000 and invest that $60,000 into enrollment fees, because even though the student's only paying $31 in enrollment fee, a unit or whatever, if they have a scholarship, the apportionment money that comes back is going to be much greater than the $60,000 you invested. So, I'm not sure if I talked in circles a little bit on that one, but I'm curious on that because it is first time, and this is a governance group, and we do want your input, but it's definitely something we're doing differently. We think there's good reason and good research behind it, but it's different.
I like seeing the college pay for the employee and then putting that money towards students. I think it feels better to me.
Yeah, it was better to me as a guy who writes all the checks.
Have you heard anything from the community about that? Has there been any concerns about giving to the foundation knowing that that money is going toward the employee?
Yeah, it's definitely, that's going toward a employee. What was the question then? Yeah, it's going toward employee. Yeah, no, that's definitely a question that comes up all the time with donors. They want to know how much of your money goes straight to scholarships and programs. Oh, how much of your unrestricted funds? Oh, maybe, you know, I'll restrict this donation to a particular very narrow scholarship because I want to make sure they get 100% of my $1,000. Well, the bummer about that is, like, no, I'm trying to get them to give money to Promise so it helps all students, right? So it's definitely a question we encounter. And I didn't even think about it myself. It's like, you know, writing to the unrestricted fund just isn't as exciting because, you know, the first half of that money goes right to staffing. Shane, you had something else?
I would say also, too, that was representative of the time and where we were at college a few years ago. Now we're in a completely different spot. You know, I think it's just time to kind of look at that again.
I mean, I am going to receive, I just got a $100,000 check in my pocket here. I just got it a few hours ago and I sealed it up in here. That was from Lisa Maloff to fund students to go to the University Center. But, you know, people want to know, she wants to know that $100,000 is going to all the students, and it is. That $100,000 is going to go 100% to LCCC graduates that enroll in four-year programs at the University Center. So I this is going to make fundraising much easier for us, I believe. And I think, frankly, it's the right thing to do. I've never loved it. I've always said, you know, since I kind of walked in the door, I never was a fan of it. And I think we're in a position now to do it, and I think it'll benefit not just the students, but really the whole college. More students at this college is going to benefit our apportionment, which benefits our ability to expand programs, it benefits our ability to, you know, pay for various priorities. So
I guess what I'm hearing from you right now is if the college pays for that $60,000 out of our own budget, then it's making more than that in the long term.
Sure. Yeah.
That's basically what I'm hearing.
$60,000 of scholarships is good.
It's the research.
Yeah, I mean, if you just do the calculation on, you know, if that 60,000, I mean, if it brings you 60 different students, so it's $1,100 for a full year of school. So let's say you take that, I'll just use round math though here, just to make it kind of easy. Let's say it's $1,000, you serve 60 more full-time equivalent students. Well, they bring in $300,000 worth of apportionment.
Exactly.
So you invest 60,000, you free that up, you to send 60 more people to school full time, then the state's gonna give you 300, so.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You get behind
that?
Yes.
I had never thought about it that way, because I'd always thought about it the other way, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, as long as the students are there to bring.
Right.
True, as long as you have the demand sense. I will tell you, we'll see. I mean, we're gonna be monitoring this very closely, obviously, this year. I will tell you, on the Nevada side, the vast majority of students we talk to is, if at the California-Nevada Interstate Attendance Agreement rate, we're about the same as their Western Nevada College rate. It's that out-of-state rate that makes us more. So, but now that we have the California-Nevada Interstate Attendance Agreement, and then free and close, you know, the feeling is, but we'll see, the feeling is that we'll attract more of those students to stay in the basin and come to the South Shore.
May I offer a thought?
Please.
Please.
I agree, Jeff, with the idea of the 100%. Just in making that statement in a conversation with somebody and whatever promotional items we have, that speaks volumes. And to me, it's a trickle-down approach. It's not something you're going to see immediately, but as the reputation of our foundation grows and it is fully 100% funding student success activities, events, it's only going to benefit us in the long run. And with all due respect to those 60,000, that's not a lot. That's not a lot of money. So I'm with everyone else on, let's try this out. I think it's going to speak volumes going down the road, especially when someone like Elisa Maloff is out there who's willing to give $100,000 if she knows it's 100% going to our mission, our vision, our purpose. How can you not? You got to be able to embrace that. So, just a thought.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So, that was the last kind of note I had on this revenue sheet. Were there any questions beyond that?
And this goes back for a second read next
September 6th.
To the Board of Trustees on the 11th.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is if I see anything on there, we'd be able to follow up with you and be able to reflect on that next.
Yeah.
And then by the second read, that's I'm good with that.
Yeah. Can have a conversation.
If everyone else is as well.
Yeah, your budget resource team is available continuing through this process for questions. So Russi, Andrea, Amber, Nick, myself to some extent, probably directing you the right budget,
great,
knowledgeable version.
So in the second read, you will have the other funds as well, including the Restricted General Fund, Fund 12, all of our auxiliary funds. Be a lot more coming at you. It's a lot more accurate in a few weeks.
Good work to the budget team. Good week. Good work, everyone.
Thank you.
Where are we at?
Standing reports.
It's not really a recommendation at this point because it's a first read. We'll be asking for a recommendation September 6th.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
No action to be taken. We can move into standing reports, John.
Nothing to be done.
Okay. So, anyone in the standing reports? Nothing to?
I just have one quick thing, and that is that we have a theater performance coming up starting August 24th. It's a partnership with a small theater group in town, a new group called Black Ice, and it's a play called Night Mother. And I hope that in the interest of continuing to have an active performing arts environment in the community and supporting that, that you will attend and support theater and performing arts in our community. It's
a very intense story about a mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
Are you part of that group?
And no.
Oh, you have your other
just supervising,
yeah,
you know, supervising everything, but I'm not involved with the production and stuff. And Saturday we have the Historical Society's Chicago, so that would be this coming Saturday.
Plus,
well,
John.
Yes.
When are you coming back into town?
My travel day is our next meeting, September 6th.
Are you going to?
So
are you
going to
be
here? I'm sorry?
Are you going to be able to attend the September 7th all training day?
At this point, I'm hoping to, yes.
Okay. Be sure to check in with Community Ed to sign up for all your stuff.
Oh, okay. We'll do.
Otherwise, you might get the vegan meal.
which is still delicious.
Yeah.
I love vegetables.
Yep.
I got
Michelle, when you're ready. Michelle, anything else?
I believe that is just about it right now. Thanks.
It's Mary Ellen, you have something on behalf of Russi?
I do not, other than the budget that we presented today.
That's all
I can do a little bit.
Okay. Before I go to Jeff, we have our other vice president. Jonathan, anything you'd like to report to us?
Not at this time.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Officially. Welcome to your first meeting.
Thank you.
And I finally picked up on Jeff's voice being the one interrupting.
Surprise!
Yeah. Jeff, what do you got for us for superintendent president?
First and foremost, John, you're one of the most dedicated faculty members I know. Zooming in on summer break. You spent a weekend with us writing accreditation reports last year. So thank you for being here. That's my first.
My pleasure, sir. My pleasure.
I'm going to try and put out an email to clarify this, but I want to talk to everyone in this room to make sure we're 100% clear and hope that you folks could pass on the word to folks in your departments and definitely kind of kind of classified leadership. September 7th, the intent was September 7th, our day at Headley's, to kind of build off the day we had last year, where we had the classified employees, all the confidential instructors administration. One of the big bits of feedback I actually got from many of the classified staff, especially like, you know, their enrollment services, student services folks, said, can we invite the faculty to this? I don't know who the faculty are or these adjuncts. So we've made that open to anyone. If you're an adjunct faculty for us, if you're a full-time faculty member for us, you're part-time hourly for us, you're invited to that day. And so I think that's first and foremost, is the intent is to be inclusive as possible. One or two people asked me, saying, well, wait, what about the classified day? And says, well, the idea was to build around the classified day, but invite our other friends. Because there's always this thing, and I think many of you have been in these roles where, you know, now you're a permanent employee, but you used to, well, you started as a part-time hourly employee, right? Like, yeah. Who else did you start as a part-time hourly employee? Did you start as
I still am.
You didn't?
I started that way, but I didn't.
You've been a part-time It's like, oh, you're a part-time hourly employee. You can't come to this event. It's not for you. Or you're an adjunct faculty. You can't come to this. So we've really tried it. It's about being inclusive. It's about getting the whole team available. We know some of our faculty members won't yet be back, but they're all being invited. But if you just kind of help spread that word, and I might put out a clarifying email on top of Allie's just to kind of remind folks what we're trying to do. And I think when people think Heavenly, they think those really tall ropes course and stuff, that stuff will be available. But there's also come up, have lunch, and enjoy the view, right? Like, come hang out with your peers. Cheer on Pat when she's on the high dive. So I think that's the thing. One thing we talked about, we did a trip with all the directors this summer, and we talked about this concept, is challenged by choice. So the thing we're asking you to do is to come. Once you get up there, it's up to you. If your challenge is sitting on the bench and just cheering on your coworkers, great. You know, if you want to do one of the ropes course things, if you want to do the little gravity coaster, which I did a few years back with my kid, it's really cool. Those are all going to be provided. So it's just a day for us to have fun as a team. You know, we work a lot, and to really kind of celebrate all of you. So help me as much as possible tell that story. I will try and get that in the email to folks, but if you kind of help spread the word of why we're doing that. And
all part-time temporaries or short-terms?
All kind of part-time. I think the thing was, if somebody had, you know, they did like 10 hours for us last summer for something, we were like, if you're currently employed, be a W-2 from us, please come.
Yeah.
Will there be a professional, like a, not professional.
Like a speaker?
A professional development day, like a structured professional development.
Good question. Session. So here's where we're at right now. On this day at Heavenly, we will have a speaker for about an hour and a half, kind of like we did last year. I remember Dina Harmon did that presentation at the top of Heavenly, so we will have that. But, and I think this is something I want to come to Classified Employee Senate on, is, and I was going to put, we'd like to host a professional development training day this fall in the University Center for our permanent classified employees. Kind of focus on a handful of topics, but I thought Senate would be a good place to go. Classified employees, and kind of tell them what we're thinking, because that kind of came out of a little bit of that feedback. It's like, can we still have our own day? So we're like, well, let's do a training day. And actually, you know, a few careers back when I was in K-12, one of my jobs was doing a district-wide classified employee training day. And sometimes even we'll do this weekend. You know, there's always a question about campus open or close. And sometimes you have the same presenter do an hour and a half, and there's a 15-minute break, and people go back to enrollment services and trade off. Or, you know, departments, HR, and then the speaker does the same presentation with another group. So we might do something like that. But yes, I'll say it here. I'm committed to doing that for fall. I want to do it in the University Center because one of the values for all of us at the University Center is that's our professional development space. And so I just think we need some feedback on format and topic. But yeah, we're gonna do that.
I think that idea would go over pretty well.
Yeah.
Good. So help. Continue to breathe down my neck on that. You know, sometimes you got to be the loudest thing, right? Everyone's always very, you know, loud thing, so it doesn't hurt to remind me.
Don't tell me that, Josh.
Yeah, no. Take it back. The second it came out, I knew it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then I think the final thing I just want to talk about is, so that's, yeah, so September 7th, and then of course something this fall. The other thing I want to talk about is next week we have a few really important things happening. We are doing two open houses for the University Center, and those open houses are for everyone. So I'm gonna send a note to staff, it'll probably go out on Monday, really encouraging you to go. And one of those open houses, I think it's a 4:30 to 6:30, so the idea is folks would kind of roll out of work over there and kind of take a peek. So We want folks to be able to check out that facility. We want them to feel a part of it. So those open houses next Wednesday and Thursday night, you can come spread the word on that. They're posted on our website and our social media, but I'll put out an email probably on Monday encouraging staff to participate. But then also, I think some other ways, you know, we had kind of an opening today that was really about honoring Lisa and thanking Roberta and the contractor and some of the folks that made it possible. But we also want to do that through convocation. The morning of the State of the College, we're going to have a reception on the University Center courtyard. We're going to do some training there during convocation and also during fall. So there will be opportunities for, you know, hopefully the entire LCCC team to kind of interface in the space and be a part of that. So thank you to all of you that were there helping, taking photos and handing out champagne and greeting people and doing everything else that's required for today. Thanks for that. And there will be some other opportunities to go there and kind of use the space as a learner and also just explore with the base as an interested party. Mary Ellen's an expert tour guide, so and that's all I have, John. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the detail. Knowing that Pat's going to go off the high dive, Michelle, I'll definitely be there. Okay.
Great.
Good. Okay. Review of the Board of Trustees agenda.
So we just had a meeting. We just had a meeting this week. Our next trustees meeting will be on the 28th. On the docket for the 28th will be their first reading of the budget, and that is primarily what we'll be focused on. Of course, regular business will happen as well.
All right.
That's it.
Well, all right then. Our next meeting is scheduled. It's also a special meeting on Thursday, September 6th, 1 o'clock.
I say one thing about the board agenda. I'm sorry, John.
That's all right. You're good at doing that. So go ahead.
Michelle, I would just say we just had a board meeting this Tuesday night, as Lisa. And one thing that's in there, there's a whole detailed report about all things student housing in terms of long-term residential living plans, midterm, you know, local development plans, short-term helping students find those plans. So I know that's a big concern for folks. So if you're interested, I would just point you to that board packet to get some information. Okay, John.
All right, thank you. So again, next meeting will be Thursday, the 6th of September. 1 o'clock in the boardroom, I'm assuming. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting.